Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to episode 113 of Blue Jays Happy Hour. I'm Nick Ashbourne, joined as always by Andrew Stoughton. And I thought that this would be a good time for ye old traditional vibe check because it is an odd one. We are coming off a Blue Jays win, a decisive win, a rare 7-0 win, one in which Chris Bassitt looked really good after, you know, a few weeks of not quite being himself. We're coming off a series win over the Washington Nationals, who are probably more respectable than a lot of people give them credit for. But at the same time, the Blue Jays sit, you know, a couple games out of a playoff spot here, and there was that ugly loss to the Nationals in the mix as well. So where do you find yourself when evaluating the Blue Jays vibe charts right now?
Where is my personal vibe, or where do I feel the general mood of the team is at? Because those could be quite different, it turns out.
Well, why don't you take us down both roads, and we'll see which one's more accurate.
Well, personally, probably not accurate. As you, as longtime listeners will recall, me 2 weeks ago saying, "What are you going to worry about the fucking Mariners?" I might not have my finger on the pulse of Major League Baseball the way I like to think it is sometimes, and I'm going to kind of like stand behind that. Maybe not that particular. That nuance of that opinion, but you know, I'm not in panic mode yet. Lots of baseball still to be played. It's early. I'm one of those people. I wrote the other day, you know, there's no, you don't get extra points for clinging too long to false hope, but nor do you for declaring the season over too soon. So it doesn't really matter. We're all one side or the other of that same coin sometimes. I don't know. I think the Rangers and the Mariners and the Astros are going to beat up on each other a bunch, and the Jays have a big chance with the Rangers coming up, and the Yankees have waved the white flag, and I think they got a pretty great chance. I think I'm if I'm them, even though they're on the outside looking in at the moment because of, you know, how dumb things have gone in the last week or so or a couple weeks, my vibe is good about the team. I feel fine. I feel like they're going to make the playoffs. And if they don't, then they didn't deserve it. I feel that the mood around the team, on the other hand, though it was softened absolutely by winning that series against the Nationals. And I think you're absolutely right. Nobody wanted to pay attention to the fact that the Nationals have been pretty good since the All-Star break, and kind of looked at their overall record and was like, you got to beat these guys. They got to go 12-3 or the season's over, those sorts of weird declarations to get mad at something that won't be necessary to get mad at. Generally, I think people are understandably still not feeling this team and not feeling that the things that Ross Atkins keeps saying, which I think are generally true, which is that, you know, there's still a chance they got a run in them. There's still a chance that they can show up and look like the team that this talent on the roster suggests it should be. A lot of people are like, "Yeah, we've seen enough of this. We know what they are. We know what they aren't." And what they aren't is a team that's going to be good enough to make a real run like that. Fair enough. Disagree, but fair enough.
Yeah, I understand why people have checked out a little bit with this team. You know, we still have a whole month to play here, as you say. They are 2.5 games out as we're speaking now. That Texas series really looks like it could be a huge one. Just in terms of the way the Rangers look like the most vulnerable of the teams they're chasing, the fact that it's a 4-game series, and the fact that after that they've got quite a few games against the Rays, a team that will be presumably fighting for a division title at that point and very much motivated and not taking its foot off the gas. The Yankees, part of it all, it'll be interesting to see where they are when the Blue Jays get there, presumably in a terrible place because that's where they've been for most of the last few weeks, that's for sure. Yeah, I think the overall sentiment that the Blue Jays are not in dreadful shape is fair. You know, I'm seeing the kind of the playoff proposition as a bit of a coin flip. I think, you know, if you look at the Fangraphs odds, as people like to quote these days, it's hovering just below 50% in the 45% range. You could be a little bit more optimistic. You can push that up to 50%. I think that's fair. The other teams do have quite a few games against each other at this point. This little stretch here, it really is critical in terms of the fact that it's an opportunity. Like there is this stretch against, you know, the Rockies and the Athletics and the Royals, but it's also worth noting that a lot of these other teams are going to be facing the Athletics as well. Like that won't be a differentiator for the Blue Jays. They just happen to be facing the Athletics at a different time than these other ones. So it is, it's interesting to have this conversation. And again, we're talking over 130 games into the season. And yet if we had this conversation, you know, on Tuesday night at 10 p.m. as opposed to today, like it's just such a different thing. And so it is bizarre because if they had lost, or if, you know, if they'd lost that game that Bassett pitched on Wednesday against the Nationals, and now you've dropped two straight series at home during this opportunity in your schedule, like it is weird to kind of take a step back and think about how our feelings change so rapidly, or our thoughts change so rapidly about the team. And although you and I, you know, I think on occasion like to think ourselves as people who take a longer view, as people who are less likely to get sucked up than some others, you know, you and I would have a different, if they had lost on Wednesday, like you and I would have a different conversation as well. Like, you know, we're all human and we're all susceptible to the swings that go along with something like this. And you know, someone like Ross Atkins, who speaks about and says reasonable things, you know, he's not going to say it out loud that a certain thing made him panic or made him truly elated or whatever. But, you know, I bet he would feel pretty differently today if the Blue Jays had lost that game on Wednesday instead of the decisive win that they got.
No, you're right. And, you know, in doing a couple of like Atkins speaks things this week, like transcribing his radio hit and his session with the media, it definitely occurred to me. I think I wrote it in one spot as well. You know, like I would love to know what they actually think, right? Because obviously, you know, there's a performance aspect of what you do as the GM and what you do as the manager. And, you know, they all have great things to say about their belief in Vlad and their belief that he does all the right work and everything is good. And it's like, I mean, it's so counter to what I feel like a lot of fans would be thinking at this point. You know, we don't have to get into the weeds of the entire Vlad thing, obviously. But though that does kind of make me think about, well, for one, and this is something I think people need to keep in mind, is that, you know, especially this is partly why when the Mariners were on their run, I was like, oh, whatever, because the teams that end up in this point in this portion of the playoff picture, particularly now that we've expanded it to however many teams, you know, now that every team gets into the playoffs, basically, these are all like not mediocre, maybe strong, but like these are flawed teams, and you know, like Seattle is out there picking up Dominic Leone, running out Trent Thornton and Taylor Saucedo in their bullpen. You know, it's like that's not as scary a team and as a fait accompli that they are, you know, now that they've poked their heads out in front of the Blue Jays, that they're not going to just like reel off a bunch of losses and spin out of control and lose their spot. You know, these teams are like this. And I feel Jays fans should be happier probably to have the team that hasn't shown, you know, its talent level as well. I mean, Seattle just did, and they got back into the race and they're ahead now just by a little bit. There are definitely, as we all know, a lot of people on the Blue Jays who, we haven't seen the best of yet. And, One of them's hurt, but one of them is still playing, and it would be very nice to believe that that could actually happen. And I mentioned this like a couple times this week in pieces, like Eno Saris of the Athletic looked at the likelihood of players bouncing back, and especially players who are everyday guys who are, you know, below their projections. And there's a surprisingly large number that you know end up having pretty good Septembers, even if by the end of August they're not performing up to what was projected of them. It could still happen. Like, I feel like I'm, you know, like playing the trumpet as the Titanic goes down, but damn it, what else is there to do? I don't know.
Well, I mean, think about Matt Chapman's season, for instance, right? Where he was unbelievable in April and then has been kind of a below average hitter since. That season can also happen in reverse.
True.
I'm not saying that it will happen. I'm not saying, oh, I'm predicting that Vladdy has right. this incredible September that changes everything. But yeah, I mean, the way things happen from a timing component can be sort of arbitrary. And we don't like to think about it like that because it's not a very romantic way to think about baseball. And we consume baseball through the filter of stories and narratives and arcs. And so it's like, oh, they were building towards this, or this guy is having a truly great breakout season, or he's found this thing in his mechanics. And sometimes there are cases where someone finds something in their mechanics or changes an approach thing. And, you know, you and I in our writing are always trying to identify these type of things. It's one of the things that interests us. But sometimes things don't really happen for a particular reason. Like, even when Atkins was talking, he was discussing Vladdy in the context of being a bit of a rhythm hitter where you can kind of fall in and out of your swing, and how long you're in and how long you're out is a little bit difficult to gauge and difficult to predict. Well, yeah, a guy like Vladdy, or, you know, even, you know, Dalton Varsho, we talk about all his tinkering, can kind of fall in or out of a rhythm, and it can just happen. And I'm not saying that as sort of like a wish casting thing, or this is exactly how it's going to play out. But it's important to always remember that the way things look today could change pretty quickly for reasons that we either don't know or don't understand or are kind of random. And maybe it just sucks to think about baseball that way. Like, maybe that's just not a fun way to think about the sport. It's not a fun way to engage with it as a fan, because it's a little bit nihilistic. It's like, well, nothing matters if we can't
yes, it is.
Gauge what anything, like if there's no way to predict anything that's going to happen, which of course, you know, on a broader scale with projections and things there is. You can rein in the chaos to some extent, especially the bigger sample you take in, the more players you take in.
Got to control what you can control.
Yeah, but but the chaos is still there. And, you know, the chaos could also totally go against the Blue Jays. Like, things could get worse. You know, the bullpen that's suddenly been great all year, you could have three of the key guys fall off a cliff and lose a strike zone. You know, you could have some of the players who have done well, even surprisingly well, like a Brandon Belt or a Kevin Kiermaier. You know, the wheels could fall off those wagons. I'm not trying to present this all as something that would potentially be positive for the Blue Jays. There's plenty of room for potentially worse outcomes than we've seen, but things are not predetermined by any means. And yeah, I don't know, maybe that sucks too much to keep in our minds all the time, because maybe it's more boring to think about not knowing how anything's going to go. But I think we also just need a little humility in terms of acknowledging that, yeah, we don't know how this is going to go. And like, sorry, go ahead.
No. I think of course that's absolutely right. And yeah, we could use that. But you're right. Like, it's not like, you know, they wake up after 130 games or whatever it's been, and okay, now the regression is going to happen, so they have a better chance every day going forward. You know, like the RSP thing is an example that I've used. It's like, you know, you should probably hit as well with runners in scoring position as you do without. And they haven't, obviously. But, you know, that should regress to the mean, like a lot of things sort of do in this sport, even though, you know, of course there's fuzzy, you know, things that might be in their heads or all sorts of other reasons why they might not be, you know, succeeding in that element of the game as well as they should. But the idea of regressing to the mean doesn't mean that, like, oh, it's all going to happen in a month. And okay, so they deserve, or they should mathematically get back to where they're supposed to be by getting hot. It's like, no, you go back to having that same, the same ability to get, you know, a hit or get on base or do something, do damage with runners in scoring position as every day you wake up. And so I like thinking about it in that sort of sense, you know, if we get to October 1st and they don't make it, I would still probably say, yeah, but if they had another month, they would, I think the hitters will rebound. You know, I think that that's just sort of like mathematically sound and just sort of how that would work. I mean, I think it would be silly to think otherwise just because of their track records. And then eventually, you know, this failure becomes part of the track record and sort of subsumes what we had previously thought. And that's, it's sort of, the march of time is pretty slow. But that's obviously, you know, I described to somebody that I was talking to about my job the other day, and I was like, yeah, I'm just kind of fighting human nature constantly because that's what it is. It's like, if you're trying to cut through the bullshit and the narratives about this sport of baseball that we love, it's hard because people's nature don't accept that what they've seen over 130 games isn't what these guys are.
So I think a good transition to what I want to talk about next, because speaking of human nature, the discussion around John Schneider, I think you see a lot of, you know, some of the worst of human nature. And again, this is not necessarily me sort of riding to his defense. And I have noticed, the Andrew Stoughton Twitter account perhaps has changed its tenor slightly on the John Schneider topic. So I wanted to dive back in just because we have the Alejandro Kirk incident that is worth discussing, maybe not beating into the ground, but at least discussing a little bit. And I know the Sunday bunt was an issue for you. You may be surprised or not to know that I actually am 100% fine with that bunt. Obviously did not go well, that's for sure. But I'm fine with that decision. Is it an accurate, I don't know, description of how you're feeling, that things have soured with you and Schneider, or is it more just me clipping Twitter instances from particular moments?
No, I mean, I think I've said that I'm, you know, more sympathetic to the idea that maybe he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about, but I just in general am not sympathetic to the way that people build up the their conception of a manager in their heads over the course of a year, because I like a lot of, you know, when you drill down into the nuts and bolts of like what a lot of decisions are and what a lot of things are, they're so much of what they do is justifiable, or you there's all sorts of reasons to do what the manager did that you didn't like. And I think that when people miss that stuff, they end up being like, this guy's just an idiot. And that makes it easier the next time to think that he's an idiot. And I don't think John Schneider's an idiot. I think there have been, of course, you know, like any manager will have bad ideas. I disagree fundamentally. I'm just not a bunt guy. I just don't ever bunt with anyone ever, especially, this is what I tweeted. I said it's better to have three chances to catch a guy from second than two from third, especially when getting the two from third is not like a 100% chance to actually get that runner. I hated that. The Kirk thing, you can't in the climate in which we're living and existing, it would be hard to be able to jump to Schneider's defense about the Kirk pinch run thing, which I won't. There is more probably that's justifiable about not pinch running him there than a lot of people give credit. Maybe, as you say, look, I've already established on this podcast, like, if you're more mad than me, then you're too mad. And if you're not as mad as me, you're not mad enough. That's sort of how I approach it. So trying to, not going to back down from that, but aware that I am, in that sense, an idiot. But yeah, I think the Kirk thing was maybe okay enough, terrible, but also... I'm sure someone could justify why that made sense. And I don't think that Schneider did well enough with that, but maybe you could. Bunt thing, hated it. But also, of course, that's going to catch on with the people who have been watching and getting, you know, their eyes bleeding when he chooses one reliever over another. It does all these little things that add up over the course of the season that make them think that this guy doesn't know what he's doing. And I think a lot of that's coming from high performance, or coming from, you know, from the top down about, you know, who's healthy, who's matches up well in terms of their swing plane versus the arsenal of the pitcher that they're against. And there's all this stuff that we don't see that, you know, leads to people. And, you know, but even before the, you know, these times that it happened, you know, even 40 years ago, people were mad at the manager when results don't go the right way. I think a lot of it is silly and really actually taking it seriously. Like, I think this man is bad at his job is probably missing how little that job matters, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I wish that you would ever get an honest appraisal from a player about how they feel about a manager in the moment, but you don't. I mean, I guess you can sort of on background if you gain a mass amount of trust with a player. So there are probably people who are in that clubhouse, you know, consistently day in, day out, who've had discussions with players, and maybe they have a feel about where those players are with Schneider. You know, when we had Charlie Montoyo getting fired, all these things emerged afterwards about how the players felt about them. The people covering the team definitely had a sense of what those were, but you couldn't really report it beforehand. So there's that element of his performance we won't really know. I do think that the Kirk thing was indefensible. Like, I do. I think that, you know, why have McCoy? Like, what other situation could McCoy provide a better upgrade than that? Especially in a context where you're never going to pinch hit him. He's been way below average at AAA offensively. And you are the home team, so there aren't going to be defensive replacements. So, like, this is the best chance he could have had to make any kind of impact.
What if they were only down by one run? Then they would have done it.
The tying run. The legendary tying run. The only run that matters in baseball. I think that the issue for... So I think a lot of people watching are like, that's a terrible decision. You could argue that costs them a game. Hell, maybe it doesn't, because they could tie it up and they could easily lose in extras too. So it's not like you can flip that from one loss in the ledger to one win in your mind. It's not that concrete. But I think the thing that made me maybe question Schneider a little bit more than I had in the past was just I felt his explanation for it was really poor.
Yeah.
On because he addressed sort of multiple layers of it. And I wrote a piece and I was like, here's all the layers. Here's all the things that he said, all of his reasonings. And here, in my view, is why each of them doesn't make any sense. and so it's like, oh, we might need Kirk's bat later. It's like, well, fuck later. You got five outs left in the game. Like, you're talking about the 10th or 11th inning potentially. And Kirk's bat has been below average all season. I know he's been quite good in the last couple of games, sort of since this incident. But... you know, the value of his at bat over the other one isn't that significant. You know, talking about the tying run being a big thing, again, when you only have five outs to play with, you're down by multiple runs. Every run, it turns out, is pretty damn valuable. And yeah, him kind of chirping back at a little bit of the heat, saying, oh, if it was anyone but Kirk, they would have scored. Well, if it was anyone, that's what actually would happen. If anyone Kirk, no one would be saying anything. Well, yeah, if it's anyone but Kirk, then they probably would have scored. So it just...
But it was Kirk.
So it, yeah. It just seemed like it was like a poor decision defended poorly in the moment. And then he felt the need to sort of like circle back about it. And yeah, this is one kind of shitty moment sort of for him. And I think if we're being honest, he probably realizes he made a mistake there and it was a costly mistake. But the way he handled the whole thing, I don't know. It was just, there's a bad vibe coming off that. How much does that matter? Who knows? Like, I've always been one to say that we just don't have the tools available to us to really, really drill down and adequately assess how good managers are. So I don't...
Well, surely he would never have a flub like that in, you know, in a do or die playoff game.
No, of course. I think he's much like the rest of the Blue Jays. He absolutely is clutch as hell. And when it really matters, that's when he's at his best. I think we can leave that there. We're not going to come up with anything new on that. It is what it is. I don't think anything is going to sort of change in a profound way in the near future. One of the news items from today, we generally like to lead with transactions when they happen, even minor ones, but this is more of a transaction that did not happen. Sadly for Mr. Randall Grichuk, everyone else on the Angels who they ruthlessly dumped on waivers to avoid luxury tax, which, I mean, it sucks and it's stupid for the sport and the fact that it could have sort of a competitive impact, in particular, I guess, on the AL Central, is a bit wild. It just shows the idiocy of a franchise in terms of the fact they traded real prospects to get some of these guys in the first place and didn't trade Otani. Like, it's all malpractice. It all makes the Angels an absolute joke. But I did feel kind of bad for Randall Grichuk that everyone else got picked. And he was at the schoolyard, you know, the last kid there who didn't get picked for the team. Do you think was there any case for the the Blue Jays handsome Randy reunion that a few people were kind of talking about in the run up to this?
I'm sure it was discussed internally. Why wouldn't it be? I don't know what their internal opinions of handsome Randy as a presence is, but I can sure see how terrible he's been since he went to Anaheim, and how I could understand how people are suspect of his numbers in Colorado. And you know, I didn't see a huge fit there. Like Hunter Renfro, I could understand going after that. Harrison Bader would probably have been my top choice had he fell to the Blue Jays, you know, just because that's a guy who hits lefties, can play great defense and be a great base runner. Like that's a person that you could stick on the end of your bench instead of Mason McCoy, whose name I'm never going to, you know, not double check myself saying, or several, you know, look, no offense to all the people who really, a lot of people out there really invested in the Buffalo crew, and it's great stories there, and I've been happy to see some of these AAA guys like really start to make some noise and have people, you know, ready to bang the drum for them to get called up. Not sure they're the difference makers that, you know, David Schneider has looked like he has while he has like a 500 BABIP, But Bader could have made sense. Renfro, I could absolutely get just because, you know, it's some power, anything out of this lineup. But man, I was pleased and not surprised that that Grichuk 2.0, which is the end of his original extension with the Blue Jays, did not come to fruition.
Yeah, I can see that sort of theoretical fit and the idea of, oh, you know, there's not that much sort of pure outfield depth beyond your starting guys. You kind of have guys who are capable of playing outfield but aren't necessarily the best at it. But his defensive metrics have been awful this year. You know, having a right-handed bat to bring off the bench that is decent, again, that's something that has been a need. He had been good against lefties this year and at times in his career. I mean, I liked Renfro as an idea a little bit better, but you know, they didn't have that opportunity. Guys, teams lower in the race were really snapping these guys up. So I don't know. I would be shocked. I'll put it this way. I would be absolutely shocked if the end of the Blue Jays season comes and people are still thinking, man, if they had got Randall Grichuk on August 31st, we'd be talking about a whole different result here.
I feel that's right. I also feel like, I mean, I don't think that, you know, Ross and Mark are necessarily, their employment is as tenuous as a lot of people, you know, sort of wish cast that it is. But I also, I mean, I think the 1/6 of Randall's salary would have been like $1.5 million. And that's a tough ask to go to Edward Rogers, to pull him out of the fucking Mar-a-Lago MAGA party and be like, hey, remember that time we got you to approve us spending a ton of money on Randall Grichuk? What if you just give us 1.5 mil? That is hardly anything. It's like, I don't know that's a tough ask, I think, for a guy who we all saw how that played out.
Yeah, I mean, internal optics, I think sometimes people assume that there's sort of a purity in the way the baseball moves are made. But internal optics and politics matter within any company, in any context, even in baseball. And that's something I hadn't really considered. But yeah, absolutely. I don't think that that's the hill they want to, like, that's not the hill they want to die on. That's not the, they don't want to, it's not worth creating any friction whatsoever for a Randall Grichuk when who knows. Yeah, like you said, I don't think their jobs are necessarily in sort of immediate peril, but you only have so many bullets, and I don't think
you already wasted a bunch on that guy.
Yeah, I don't think you want to do that. Interesting. I don't do this often, but we're talking immediate transactions. I don't do this often, sort of mid podcast, but we do have news here mid podcast that Spencer Horwitz is coming back to Toronto for this. I don't know. It's going to be for the stretch run, presumably when rosters expand, that gives them some latitude to keep them around. Any instant thoughts on this breaking news that won't be remotely breaking news when people listen to this?
Yeah, I don't know. How is Brandon Belt okay?
Yeah.
I already kind of, I heard it kind of dumped on the look, and fuck, the way that the Blue Jays have gone this year, me being sort of like poo-pooing the idea of hey, this guy's red hot in AAA, maybe they should just give him a shot. I might be being a little too strongly opposed to that. They could have used some of that. Though also, you know, you can hurt yourself by dipping into that well too much. You can hurt yourself by getting Paul DeJong and giving him way too much run. But yeah, he's had a really nice year. He's on the 40. He's been, he's not necessarily, he's like a Rays guy. It's like, oh, does he not hit a ton of home runs, but he can play first base a bit and is just going to hit? Sure. Perfect. Done and done. Don't expect to see him get a ton of run. Don't think he's going to be a difference maker. Pleased for him. And if Belt gets hurt at any point, then there's a bat and there's a pinch hit bat there for them a little bit as well. You never know. I mean, look, David Schneider, as much as everybody is like in love with him now, and I try to pump the brakes a little bit on that. Like, that was your 13th best prospect, you know, mid-season even. Like, it was a guy who had a really nice season in Buffalo in an offensively inflated environment that you just wouldn't have expected this out of. So, you're probably not going to hit the jackpot twice. But yeah, give him a little run while you can, when you can, when opportunity arises. See what happens. If he grabs a job, then let him grab a damn job. Because nobody else is, they're all just walking away from opportunities this year. All the, the regular big leaguers for the most part.
The other breaking news is that Josh Donaldson just signed with the Brewers on a minor league deal, but we can let that one go. Yeah, I think you're right in that Horwitz is probably not going to get a massive amount of run unless things, as you say, get worse with Brandon Belt. He has that, he's got that profile. It's always a little bit hard to trust because it's pretty reliant on him, not striking out, which is going to be harder to do at the major league level. He's got the good eye. He doesn't hit for a ton of power and doesn't play a premium position, and that makes it tricky for him to be a really good player. But I think, in the context of the Blue Jays, they're not going to need him to be a really good player. They're not going to need him to be someone who sort of prorates for 2-3 WAR over a season, which is pretty hard to do with his profile. They need him to give him a couple quality at bats in certain circumstances. And, based on what he's done at AAA, there's a half-decent chance he can do that. So as long as people don't become of the belief that the Davis Schneider thing is something you can just keep replicating, or hell, even keep replicating half of or a third of.
Yeah.
expectations held in check. He could be someone who is useful in certain circumstances to the Blue Jays, which is probably more than can be said for Mason McCoy, who apparently isn't even faster than Alejandro Kirk. so there's a time and a place for Spencer Horwitz, I guess. In terms of the Davis Schneider thing, it's funny. Like, every podcast, I feel like we're like, okay, we're going to check on Davis Schneider because something's going on. And in the back of my head, I'm like, this could be the last time we spotlight David Schneider. Maybe that's unfair, but like, he's not going to be the story again when we talk a week later. And yet, sort of lo and behold, last time we were talking, hey, maybe this guy should get a little bit of run. Of course, John Schneider, avid listener, he's loving this episode in particular.
No doubt.
And he's decided to give Schneider that run, and it's pretty incredible what he's done with it. We're talking about 14 games, as you said. A little bit of break pumping needs to happen for sure. But what's your sort of expectation for him? Like, gonna fall to maybe just Babe Ruthian levels? maybe go from the second or cleanup hitter to maybe the fifth or leadoff man, something like that?
Well, we're talking about 14 games here on August 31st, and he was called up on the 4th. So to go back a little bit to the Schneider thing, I mean, I think that's also part of what people are upset about. And part of what I guess I would say is, you know, a decision that's not entirely his. Yeah, he should have played more. It turns out they could have cost themselves some games just by how hot he is. Would love this to continue. Would love it to half continue, like you say, a quarter continue. It would be really cool. It's a great story. You know, he looks the part. He's taking good at bats. That's more than a lot of these fuckers can say. Even though I think the people don't really, you know, aren't as great at reading at bats, you know, that was a good at bat or not, as they think they are. You know, at least the Twitter mob isn't, probably, but even though there are probably some people within it that are just fine at that
point. There's good people in every mob, you know.
That's right. Maybe if we work within the mob, we can turn it to better
let's
ideas.
Let's not quote me on that, other than all the people who are listening.
But yeah, I don't know. Well, he's earned it at this point, and that's, you know, more than you can say about most players, most hitters on this roster, right? So you got to let it. You got to let him do what happens, right? And people don't want to hear this, I suspect. After that first weekend in Boston, he did get some walks. He did seem like he was having good at bats, but he came out and he got a bunch of plate appearances in Cleveland. And then after that, and he was like 1-for-14 or something like that with a few walks mixed in. But, you know, it was more justifiable that he sat, maybe not as long as he did, but that he sat a bit after that. Like, I think people have this idea that, like, he should have been playing from that first day, from day one, from how he exploded on the scene, that should have been it. I think that's not accurate, but I do think he's earned more opportunities until, you know, maybe I would give him a 1-for-14. Maybe I'd give him a 1-for-25. That would be a bit tricky after that. But also, what are you getting from anybody else? You know, Santiago Espinal, loved you 2022. Hard pass. You got options left? I don't know. Let's consider that. You know, yeah, I don't know what to expect from Schneider, but at least there's somebody out there, as luck-based or as whatever-based as any of it is, that's giving this team a chance. You know, not just to win every night, but just to get a runner on base or to do damage every time he comes to the plate. I wish I felt like that about more players on this team.
Yeah, and yeah, he's not going to be, you know, the 280 WRC plus guy from here on out. But I think it's fair to expect that he can be kind of a league average hitter from here on out. You know, I'm looking at Zips as projecting for a 110 WRC plus, Steamer 114. You know, most of Fangraph's projections have him at above average. You know, his expected WOBA's 421. Like, his real one's 576. You know, there's crazy stuff going on. But his expected one is 421. Yeah. Like, it's not like he's come up and he's a guy who strikes out. You know, I think back to Stephen Kwan when he first came up with the Guardians. And it's like, this guy never strikes out. And then when he came up, he just had all these balls coming for hits. It's like, wow, is this guy a superstar? Not really. He's just a guy, you know, like Whit Merrifield can have those stretches too. Like, if you don't strike out and you put the ball in play and you've got some speed, you can have these stretches. You know, Schneider isn't that guy. Like, he does take his walks. Like, I think he's probably a good bet to be a double-digit walk percentage guy at the big league level. He does hit home runs. He does pull the ball in the air. I don't know.
That's real. That's been real nice. Not enough of that this year, boys.
Yeah, like, he does the Danny Jansen thing. He does the early career when he was actually quite good Kevin Biggio thing that no one really remembers.
Well, and you wrote about is the high fastball thing today as well, right?
Like, yeah, like, he's actually done better, even though he, you know, he's very public and just goes out and tells everyone what he's bad at. But even in the context of that, he's been good at taking those pitches, fouling off those pitches, and actually, you know, turning on the occasional one as well. Yeah, like, I think that you're confident ish, as weird as that is to say, like considering his background and how little we knew about him coming into the year, but you're confident that he can be at the very least a cog in the lineup from here on out. And reliable cogs have been hard to come by, and they're awfully hard to come by when Bo Bichette and Matt Chapman are gone, right? Like one of these left infield spots on any given night, you know, you're going to see an Espinal, you're going to see an Ernie Clement. Hell, you're going to see a Mason McCoy at some point, perhaps. Like they, you know, you're going to see maybe more Biggio than you wanted. You're, you know, they're not going to
be at shortstop, perhaps.
At shortstop, at third base. Like people forget how bad the Biggio at third base thing was. It was pretty grim. And so now they really don't have a choice. Like they kind of have to play him. Because there aren't, like you said, there just really aren't other options at the moment. Although, you know, Ernie Clement could be a thing. I don't know.
He had a really nice year in AAA. I mean, I've been downplaying that, you know, because people have been banging the drum on this on AAA all year. But you know what? I think Dan and Joe Siddle or Dan or Buck, whoever was doing the games this week, were talking about, you know, a change in his approach. It seems to like he had a, even though the offensive environment is crazy, he had a real, real nice year in Buffalo this year. And also, you know, we saw him have that play, you know, the pickoff play, Bassett out there pointing at him, giving him props for putting that on. And, you know, just a veteran guy who, you know, kind of looks like he might know ball. I've got more time for Ernie Clement today than I have at any point all year, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could get a Joe Inglet run from Ernie Clement.
Give me a John Birdie. Let's go. Let's get an everyday-ish guy. Let's get a second division guy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's hit some home runs this year at AAA, which he'd never really done at any other point in his career. He doesn't strike out. Like, you know, exactly the guy I was describing before, the guy who kind of sprays the ball around and he's, you know, a little bit of luck can go a long way. Like, I think that's who Ernie Clement is, which is fine. You know, like if you're telling me, Nick, your life depends right now on an at bat taken by Ernie Clement or Santiago Espinal, I'm going with Clement. Like, I mean, a lot of that has to do with what has happened with Santiago Espinal. A lot of that. But, you know, Ernie Clement's a guy with a lot less MLB experience. He's never garnered all-star consideration. And yet I'm still going to give it to Ernie Clement and his, you know, 20 plate appearances this year. He has shown me enough that I'm doing it. I'm giving over my life to Ernie Clement.
Before we move on to whatever else we got, I don't know. I usually just let you drive the bus because I don't know what I'm doing in terms of. But I derailed you talking about David Schneider. I did want to ask while you were talking about David Schneider, has he earned the 2024 second base job?
I mean, he's definitely earned consideration for it, right? Or maybe even you might say pole position. I don't think that he's at a level where he stops you from making moves that you think are prudent because you're like, oh, we can't do that. We have David Schneider. Like, I don't think he's there.
But I think many people might at this point, but
no,
but I agree with you, yes.
But at the same time, he gives you an extremely cheap possibility there, who I think you could project with some level of confidence would not embarrass himself. And that is a nifty thing to have when you're trying to build the rest of your team, right? Like I think you could easily talk yourself into the idea that somebody else would be an upgrade over David Schneider, but that somebody else would cost a lot more, whether it was prospects in trade or in free agency.
And Whit Merrifield back, or yeah.
That's something I haven't contemplated. People haven't caught up to how bad Whit Merrifield has been lately, and the fact that he's been hit fourth and fifth in the lineup at times is very questionable, even in the context of the poor alternatives available.
He was leading off a week ago.
The handling and assumptions about how good a player Whit Merrifield is have been kind of weird. But yeah, I don't think Whit Merrifield is coming back. You know, the Blue Jays showed a willingness to let, you know, Marcus Semien go and Robbie Ray go because they're like, we've gotten the best we could out of these players and we'll let them get their money elsewhere. I think you got to have the same attitude with Whit Merrifield. So he might just be the best option because bringing him into second base means that you maximize your flexibility elsewhere. And this front office has always been enamored with the idea of maximizing their flexibility elsewhere.
This is true. And also it's true that that statement about we've got the most out of this guy, let him get his money elsewhere. I think of a generational hitter on this team that maybe that could apply to as well in a year or two.
That is accurate. I think we're going to end off here just a little quick about the stretch that lies ahead, because it is an opportunity in the next few games, and I think you can rope the Texas series into that as well. You can call it kind of the next 13 games or so. So before we leave here, Stoughton, what gives you the most hope that the Blue Jays are going to make some hay here, and what presents you with the most dread?
What gives you the most hope that they'll make some... It's hard to point to anything in particular other than, like, you know, regression to the mean, which is, like, not super compelling, even for someone who appreciates that sort of concept. I don't think Vlad, if I were a betting man, even though I think that long term, the you can't strike the ball the way that he does and avoid walks and avoid strikeouts and pick up walks the way that he does and be this bad. Asking it to all turn around in a month is a lot. The schedule is good. Not even just their schedule, but like the fact that the AL West teams are going to beat up on each other a little bit, and that will sort of help level the playing field for the Jays and maybe give them a little path to come through. I mean, and also they can pitch. I don't want to overlook that, because we focus a lot on the offense because it's been not abysmal, but just extremely frustrating. And you know, pitching and defense, people used to tell you that'll win championships, and then they watched a season of it and it's fucking miserable. But they can pitch, they can keep runs off the board, they can catch the ball, they only have to hit a little bit at the right time, and there's no reason they shouldn't be able to do that. So that's, I guess, what that is. And then the dread thing is just, like, if you watch this fucking team, like, it's just the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expected different results. And I appreciate that people are at their breaking point and don't feel like that this is a team that is going to suddenly change its stripes when it comes to being just completely fucking unable to cash their opportunities and to just not be this dreadful fucking creaky old ship listlessly sailing towards October oblivion. I guess those are not super specific, but who knows? I'm excited in a way to see how it plays out. I'm excited to see a few wins and have some nights where I don't want to throw my phone across the room looking at Twitter or turn the Blue Jays game off in the second inning because they're down 3 runs, and that seems like an impossible task to come back from.
That is fair. That is absolutely fair. Yeah, I think my cause for hope for the Blue Jays is, like you said, the schedule is good, and it also, the schedule is meeting them where they are. Like, the fact that they're out Bo Bichette and Matt Chapman right now, and we don't know exactly where Brandon Belt's at. Like, that could be devastating under different circumstances, but they are in a situation where they're facing teams that they can maybe mitigate those losses against. So I think that's a cause for hope for the Blue Jays. Also, there's a couple of players, I think, a little bit quietly coming around, like George Springer returning to the leadoff spot. He's kind of looked like himself since more or less the beginning of August. Dalton Varsho, also quite encouraging, should probably hit ahead of Whit Merrifield, for instance, in the lineup.
I'm okay with that.
Maybe put someone with some power in the five spot. Who's those are a couple many reasons for hope for the Blue Jays. And then on the dread side, you know, I think those injuries, to be honest, there's, you know, you're putting them on the 10-day IL, but Bichette and Chapman are guys that play when they're here. They play every day. Like, they log a huge workload. So I think that if they're out sort of past this little stretch for whatever reason, They are really tough guys to work around because they're not guys who have a spot where they sort of rotate through. They're players who absolutely are locked in at their positions and kind of filling a whole left side of the infield for an extended period of time. Kind of tough.
And their backups are garbage, yeah.
Yeah, not ideal. Hey, don't talk about Ernie Clement like that.
Sorry. Well, he's a breakout candidate.
All right, we will leave it there. We'll say goodbye to the month of August. And we're going to look forward to some meaningful baseball for the Toronto Blue Jays in September. So
it's all you can ask for when the season starts.
All you can ask for. We appreciate you guys tuning in. We hope you'll listen next week. And any ratings or reviews, things like that you want to give, obviously are good for the evil algorithms that rule all of our lives. So we'll talk to you later.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com